love to do in our house is our kids are always, like, when we have a little bit extra time before bed, they want to watch America's Funniest Home Videos. And so they're like, let's watch AFV, which was like popular when I was a kid. And still, they're running reruns of this. I don't even know if it's still on today, but we watch it. And I consider it education. Like, this is what not to do. When you watch these videos, it educates, hopefully it educates my children on what not to do. And not only that, I think it gives me an education. But if you are a kid, do not attempt to set up any ramp of any kind and try to take a bicycle over it. That's foolish, right? If you're an adult, you do not belong on a trampoline, okay? That's foolish. If you are an adult, do not attempt to ride any bike, skateboard, or car that belongs to a kid. Okay, these are all foolish things, and you watch these videos and you learn from them so that you don't repeat the same mistakes. And ultimately, we know we're foolish when we see these things happen to people and we follow in the same patterns, right? And tonight what we're going to do is we're going to jump into some foolishness when it comes to the king. And I hope that as you read this tonight, that we won't follow in the same patterns. That we would look, that we would learn, that we would be educated tonight and reminded not to follow the same practices and patterns that King Nebuchadnezzar does. And just to kind of like maybe jump ahead in the sermon a little bit tonight, in many ways, we are just like King Nebuchadnezzar. In many ways, what King Nebuchadnezzar does here in Daniel chapter 3 is what you and I do every single day. And I hope that we would learn from that. Tonight, I'm reminded as I sat in the back and we came and we read these praises of what God has done. And I thank God and I go, man, God alone is worthy of our worship. And then as we got into prayers, it brought me comfort that so many people are praying and seeking, wanting God to be first, wanting God to be their greatest desire, and this idea of really wanting to pursue hard after Jesus. And I love that. I love that that's our heart. But you and I know that we live in a world today that is full of temptations and things that are pulling for us to create a value, to create meaning, to create significance in our lives. We all have things that are pulling for our attention, and they try to take the place of God in our lives. And so tonight, that's what we're going to begin talking about. Tonight, I've entitled the message, The Folly of Idolatry. The Folly of Idolatry. And we're going to read Daniel chapter 3. Let's go ahead and stand together. I'm going to read Daniel chapter 3, verse 1 through 8 tonight. It says this, King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits and its breadth 6 cubits. He set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Then King Nebuchadnezzar sent to gather the satraps, prefects, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces gathered for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up, and the herald proclaimed aloud, "You are commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages, that when you hear the sound of the horn, the pipe, the lyre, the trigon, the harp, the bagpipe, and every kind of music, you are to fall down and worship the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall immediately be cast into a burning, fiery furnace." Therefore, as soon as all the people heard the sound of the horn, the pipe, the lyre, the trigon, the harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, all the peoples, nations, and languages fell down and worshiped the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. This is the word of the Lord. You can be seated. So, before we jump into this text, I hope that even as we read that, you're like, why in the world like all these people, and we listed them twice. Like, and then all these instruments, and then it really focused in on Nebuchadnezzar setting something up. It says that over and over. It's just kind of weird phrasing. In fact, I think it's used like 11 different times in Daniel chapter 3. It's he has set up. He has set up. And we're really jumping into why in the world is King Nebuchadnezzar so foolish? And the foolishness of idolatry here, and this foolishness of worshiping things that don't really deserve our worship. And if you're going to jump in, to truly understand the foolishness tonight, you have to go back to what we just read in Daniel chapter 2 last week and what we talked about. We talked about King Nebuchadnezzar having this dream. And he had this dream, and he brought all of the people together to try and interpret the dream, and no one can do it. And Daniel comes forward, and Daniel asks God for mercy and how to interpret the dream, and he gives Daniel favor, and he gives Daniel wisdom, and he comes before the king, and he interprets this dream, and this dream is of an image. And this dream is of an image made up of all these different types of metals. And all of these metals make up what Daniel defined as different kingdoms that were going to come after the kingdom of Babylon, King Nebuchadnezzar. And so all of these kingdoms were described, and King Nebuchadnezzar was described as the head. He was made of gold. And ultimately, there was going to be this stone that was going to come, and the stone was going to hit the feet of this image, and it was going to destroy it, and all of these kingdoms were going to come down, but there was going to be this stone that was going to build into a great mountain, and that kingdom is going to reign forever. And so he is told, this image is going to come down, this kingdom is going to come down, all other kingdoms are temporary, and only the kingdom of God will last forever. And King Nebuchadnezzar, it tells us in like 42, 47, 46 and 47, King Nebuchadnezzar, after hearing this, fell upon his face, and he paid homage to Daniel and commanded that an offering, an incense, be offered to him. And then the king said this, verse 47, the king answered and said to Daniel, truly, your God is God of God. Excuse me, God of gods and Lord of kings and a revealer of mysteries. And he worships him. And then literally, we turn the page and we don't know how much time between chapter 2 and chapter 3, and he builds an image and calls everyone to worship it. It's foolish. It's foolish. When we read this, we're like, what in the world? Like, what is going on here? It seems like this story is so back and forth. Here he is. He's told his kingdom will not last. He's told that his kingdom is going to come down, that there is going to be a kingdom that's going to last forever. And he says, truly, that is God of gods, Lord of lords, King of kings. And he worships him. And then we turn the page, and it says, King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold. And we're like, what is happening? And maybe before, you kind of like, man, this is insanity. Why in the world, how can you be so foolish to go from worshiping the God of the universe to a God that Nebuchadnezzar had set up? How in the world do you do that? And before you point the finger at King Nebuchadnezzar and like, how in the world do you do that? We should be like, how in the world do we do that? Because you and I, we come in this room and we sing songs on Christ the Solid Rock, I Stand, and we walk out these doors and we try to stand on all sorts of other foundations all week long. We set up these foundations to worship, to find our significance and meaning. We set up all of these things, and we have no idea what happened. We're not given any history or time. I mean, maybe hundreds of years. Definitely not hundreds of years, but maybe several years have passed, you know, from chapter 2 to chapter 3, and we see that he builds this image of gold. And it's fascinating. I want you to think about the comparisons and the contrast of these stories. We see that the first image that was described in the dream was made up of all different types of metal. But here, it says King Nebuchadnezzar made one of all gold. And it's like, what's he trying to say by that? That in a way of like, okay, well, maybe the reason this other image was so weak is because it wasn't all made of me. We don't know. It's just speculation here. But he builds this whole image of gold. We see this idea of that there's a kingdom that's coming that it has a divine origin. It's not cut out by human hands. And then we read in Daniel chapter 3 that this image was crafted by King Nebuchadnezzar. It was made, he had set it up. And so we see these different definitions of what's going on here. And I just want to encourage you again is that you and I, that we live in this tension between Daniel 2, the last few verses there, and this tension of Daniel 3. And we live in this tension of going, truly he's God of gods and Lord of lords and King of kings, and we're setting up other images to worship. And we wrestle in this tension. All of us in this room are worshipers. I think the average person, when we hear worship, we immediately, our mind goes to a church gathering, our mind immediately goes to music or an offering or sacrifice. But we're all worshipers, and all of us are facing this challenge of worshiping the Creator and worshiping created things. And that's what we see kind of compared here is the Creator, who is not created by human hands, and something that is set up. And we're constantly in that tension. It tells us that in Romans 1:21-25, it says, "For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking, and they were foolish." There's that word again. "They were foolish in their hearts, were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools." What were they doing? "They traded and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man, birds, animals, and creeping things." They made idols. What happened then? Verse 24, "Therefore God gave them up in the lust of their hearts to impurity, to the dishonoring of their bodies among themselves, because they exchanged the truth about God." They distorted the truth about God and for a lie. "And they worshipped and served the Creator." They worship and serve the creation over the Creator. And that's you and I. Worship, we constantly struggle and wrestle with this creation, Creator worship. And we fight this. Paul Tripp says, "We are all worshipers because we're all living for something. You got up this morning and there was an intentional, like something drive in your heart to do something. Maybe it was to eat pancakes. That's a good, like, but it's easy to worship pancakes. Like, it may have been to, like, be in creation. And it's easy just to worship creation. And maybe it's to be around family. And it's easy just to worship family. There was a drive in all of us. And all those things are good things, but they're not God things. And all of us are living for something. All of us are digging for a treasure. All of us are in a pursuit of some dream. Behind everything we do, behind every motivation, there is some kind of hope. Being a worshiper means you attach your meaning, purpose, and identity to things. And we either get that identity, purpose, and meaning from our Creator or from creation. And that's the wrestle. And so what we're going to see is there are four foolish things that happen in this text. And that's what I want to point out tonight, just the folly of idolatry. And the first thing in King Nebuchadnezzar's foolishness is it's a blatant disregard for wisdom. It's a blatant disregard for wisdom. Again, we're not told how much time between chapter 2 and chapter 3, but he's told in chapter 2 that there is a kingdom and it's going to last forever, and all other kingdoms are coming down. He's given this wisdom, and he ignores it. Or he's trying to change and control the outcome. And I want to focus on that, because a lot of times, you and I, we are given truth from God's word. In the same way that this prophetic word came to Daniel and honestly to this king, you and I are given truth from God's word. And we can either choose to live by it or ignore it and try to control the circumstances around it. So, for instance, I want to take you back a little bit and go back to the Tower of Babel in Genesis chapter 11. What's interesting here is this story mimics so much of what happened in Genesis chapter 11. And so if you read back in Genesis chapter 11, they built a tower. And you're like, this sounds like the same story. They're building this tower. And they said, let us build ourselves a city and a tower that goes to the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed over the face of the whole earth. And so there's a sense of going, there's a fear in them that they're going to be dispersed. There's a fear in them that they need to make a name for themselves. And so let's build a tower. And I'm like, wow, this story is very similar to Daniel chapter 3, where here they are, and I'm like, I'm wondering if this is King Nebuchadnezzar going, hey, Maybe we should do the same thing. Rather than us being dispersed or destroyed, maybe we can unify and I can distract either from the worship of God or at least defer to something else and unify all people around this other God. And if I can distract them and deter their attention to something else, then maybe we can unify and we'll be a stronger culture and we'll withstand when things are going to come against us. We'll be a strong nation, a strong foundation. And it's foolish. It's a blatant disregard for wisdom. Because God said it's coming down. But we all want something we can control. I can imagine myself, just like King Nebuchadnezzar, if I'm told my kingdom is coming down, I would probably, in my own wisdom, attempt to do something to withstand that, to try and strengthen, to try and unify it. And so here he's trying to build it, and it's not, again, it's not made up of all different metals. He builds it of gold. I think it's interesting, he calls all of these important people, it's almost to make it like the cultural norm in the city, he calls all these specific people to come and worship, that almost to stand against it is your death. That's what we read. And so many of us do exactly what King Nebuchadnezzar does here, that it is a blatant disregard for wisdom. So let me tell you how, like, practically that works its way out in my life. I am told in Psalm chapter 16, verse 11, this truth. You make known to me the path of life. In your presence there is fullness of joy, and at your right hand are pleasures forevermore. I'm told that. That is wisdom from God. That is a promise to you and I that he makes known to us the paths of life, and in his presence there's fullness of joy, and at his right hand are pleasures forevermore. But every day I have an opportunity when my eyes open either to trust that and walk in that, or I begin to have a disregard for wisdom and I try to create my own fullness of joy and my own pleasures in life. And I want us to think about that, because we're given this truth, and either we believe this to be true, that in his hand are pleasures forevermore, or yet I'm left to seek out my own path of life, and I've left to seek out my own pleasures. And I want you to see how often that's a real wrestle. Do I trust God that in his right hand are pleasures forevermore? Do I trust that? Do I believe that? Or do I have a blatant disregard for wisdom? That's the first folly. Second folly is this. The second sign of foolishness of the king is trading the creator for creation. Trading the creator for creation. We read all throughout this text, he had set up. He made it. Now, I don't know if he necessarily was fooled into worshiping this golden image, but he's inviting others to worship this, and they know, they have the knowledge that he set it up. And we see this foolishness in this text, that they're worshiping something made by man. Isaiah 44 talks about this. If you want to write that down in the notes, Isaiah 44, 12 through 20, it talks about the foolishness of crafting idols. It says this, "The ironsmith takes a cutting tool and works it over the coals. He fashions it with hammers and works it with his strong arm. He becomes hungry and his strength fails. He drinks no water and is faint." It says, "The carpenter stretches a line. He marks it out with a pencil. He shapes it with planes and marks it with a compass. He shapes it into the figure of a man, with the beauty of a man, to dwell in a house. He cuts down cedars, and he chooses a cypress tree or an oak. He lets it grow strong among the trees of the forest. He plants a cedar, and the rain nourishes it. Then it becomes fuel for man. He takes part of it, and he warms himself. He kindles a fire, and he bakes bread. Also, he makes a god, and he worships it. He makes it an idol, and he falls down before it. Half of it he burns in the fire. Over half he eats meat. He roasts it, and he's satisfied. Also, he warms himself and says, 'Aha, I'm warm, I've seen the fire.' And the rest of it he makes into a god, his idol, and he falls down and worships it. He prays to it and says, 'Deliver me, for you are my God.'" This is foolishness, right? Like, he just made this. He's warming himself. He's cooking his food over it. He crafts it, and he asks him to save him. It says in verse 18, "They know not, nor do they discern, for he has shut their eyes. No, they cannot see, and their hearts they cannot understand. No one considers, nor is their knowledge or discernment to say, 'Half of it I burned in the fire. I also baked bread on its coals. I roasted meat and have eaten, and I shall make the rest of it an abomination. Shall I fall down before a block of wood?' He feeds on ashes. A deluded heart has led him astray, and he cannot deliver himself. And he can't even look at his right hand and say, 'Is this thing in my right hand a lie?'" It's a lie. It can do nothing for us. It is not worthy. It has been crafted by man. And we're like, we read this story, and there's not a person in this room who goes, "Yeah, that's crazy. Like, why would you do that?" And we do that. We worship things that we create. We worship things that we build. And they'll never deliver. They'll never be able to accomplish what they have promised. I remember, it's interesting, this thought came to mind, Beth Moore is in the news this week. I won't get into that. You definitely can go back and look into that. But when I was at Passion Conference, right out of college, we were doing a one-day event in Shelby Farms, Tennessee, and Beth Moore taught on this passage in Isaiah 44. And she's there, tens of thousands of college students all across Shelby Farms, Tennessee. And she asked you, "What are you holding in your right hand that you're looking to, that you're trusting in Jesus, more trusting in more than Jesus?" And she said, to look at it, to hold your right hand up. And she said, "What is it that you want more than Jesus? What is it that you trust in that you're turning to more than Jesus?" And with clenched fist, she encouraged, she said, "Look at your right hand and say, 'This thing in my right hand is a lie.'" Now, what's the lie? Lie is that many of us are looking to whatever it is in our right hand to bring significance, meaning, purpose, happiness, joy, satisfaction, all of these things. We're asking it to do something that it was never, it cannot save us. It can do nothing for us. But you and I, we look to these things to bring satisfaction. And our hope is, in the grace of God in teaching us this passage and showing us the foolishness of a king, is that we would not go down this path. That we would not look, that we would truly be able to look to the things and go, "This thing in my right hand is a lie." We should have been able to look at this golden tower that was built and go, "This is a lie. It can do nothing. It has been set up by a king. It's a lie." And so it's it's never going to be able to deliver. The third thing we see in this foolishness is it talks about being made of gold. And what's interesting is many of the things that you and I worship and we look to are not like, they're gold. They're things of value. Like we can look to family, we can look to relationships, we can look to money. These things are worth, they hold value, but they don't hold extreme value like God of the universe. And so we forfeit what is of extreme value for things of lesser value. We settle, and in many ways, comparing God to gold, we settle for gold. And we're like, well, gold's good. Absolutely, gold's good. Family's good. Success is good. All of these things are good, but we're trying to elevate them to a level of God's status. And when we elevate them to a level of God's status, they can never deliver. And so maybe a way of giving you an example. There's good coffee and bad coffee, right? Yeah, okay. I hear you. All right, now, any coffee is better than no coffee. That's the way I see it. If you don't agree, I'm like, if there's a day and you wake up and there's no coffee, I mean, those are terrible days, but any coffee is better than no coffee. So, imagine for a second, okay, and I'm going to throw out, we're equal barista opportunists here, so La Barba, Blue Copper, two very well-known, great coffee places here, and Starbucks, another category. Careful, okay, another category. But imagine if you went and you bought a bag of Blue Copper, okay, and you love Blue Copper, and you get home, and you pay $21 for 12 ounces of it, right? Okay. So, and you get home, and you bust open your bag of Blue Copper, and you look inside, and inside is Starbucks. Disappointing, right? Super disappointing. And it's like, this is not Blue Copper. You can smell it. You know it's not Blue Copper, right? It's a little burnt. And it's a little overdone, and it's not Blue Copper, it's not La Barba quality. We've been fooled, and you would be so disappointed, you would be so upset because you've been fooled. You've paid, you've sacrificed for this, you know, great coffee, only to get home and you open the bag and you're disappointed. And maybe that's a humorous way to describe how many of us, when it comes to worshiping things, it comes to us in a blue copper bag. And it looks super intriguing. And we want it, and it looks pleasurable, and we're like, this is going to satisfy, and we get home, and it's disappointing. We open the bag, and it's not what we thought. And many of us are living our life in this pattern that we're continually running after things, and we're looking for these things, and we're finding ourselves disappointed after disappointment after disappointment after disappointment. And it's because none of these things can hold the full weight of the expectations we have. Do you know, like you and I, like we put God-like expectations on things. We put that on relationships. We put that on spouses. We put that on jobs. And so many of us, we would say, hey, I'm disappointed in my spouse. And it's because we've put God-like status, we've put, you know, them in a blue copper bag only to find out that they're Starbucks. Right? And there's nothing wrong with Starbucks. But we've elevated them to God-like status. We've put on them that they're God, and they can never live up to that. And you will forever be disappointed when they are your God, your job. Many of you go like, I hate my job. And it's because we put God-like status. We look to that for significance, meaning, purpose, and we've put this weight upon this to do something for us, to give us an identity, and it can never do that. It will disappoint you every time. And it's tricky because it's gold. And so it's going to be intriguing. Right? Like, if somebody puts Seattle's best there, like, you're like, I'm not really tempted to go for that, maybe, right? Unless you're from Seattle. But, you know, like, you're not tempted. But it has this desire, it has this allure that it's pulling you in, it's enticing you. And you and I, we live in this world that has these pulls. And we forfeit what is of extreme value for things of lesser value. And so, what we see in this text is idol worship. We see that we're worshiping something other than God. And many of us here tonight, we're here and we're like, yeah, we're not setting up golden towers. We're not worshiping golden towers. But we're honestly looking at other things for our comfort, satisfaction, joy, being the same things. And it's foolishness. One of the points, and I'm not gonna get into this very deep tonight, but one of the things, many of us turn to idols out of fear. We read in the text that why did these people worship it? Well, it was because on the other side it was either go to the fiery furnace or worship the golden image. And you're like, well, worship the golden image, right? Like, sounds like a good choice. And most of us are not put on this at this place of decision, either worship this or die. But we are out of fear, is how we're kind of motivated. Like, worship this or totally, like, have no happiness. Worship this or, you know, continue to live in stress. Worship this or be humiliated. And we're totally pulled in these things. Like, our fear motivates our idols in many ways. And so, a lot of different writers have talked about this, but the four primary idols behind most of our decisions in life, the four most primary things that we worship in foolishness, are control, approval, comfort, and power. We worship control because our greatest fear is uncertainty. We worship approval because our greatest fear is rejection. We worship comfort because our greatest fear is stress and demands. We worship power because our greatest fear is humiliation. I was with some guys in a core group a while back, and they said, what would you do if you weren't afraid? And what I found is, and you should ask that question, you should journey, what would you do if you weren't afraid? And go down that path. And what I found is, the reason I don't do many things is out of fear, and many times those fears are rooted to my idols. What are your idols? What are the things that you're worshiping? I think the most foolish thing is to believe that we don't have idols. In fact, I would say in most of American Christianity, you and I, we would say we don't have idols. We just put our gods up with the other god, and we say it's just an add-on. And I just add on family, I add on, you know, success, I add on all these different things, and I'm going to worship these things along with the God of the universe. And it leads to shallow Christianity. And so what's going to keep us from that is, initially, we just have to identify the idols in our life. What are your idols? Maybe some questions to ask is, what is promising joy and security apart from God? What if you lost it would cause despair in your life? What are you making sacrifices for? Money, time? would you fill in the blank? If only I had this, then I would be happy. And so we have to identify those idols. What are those idols in our life? And then once we identify those idols, we need to replace those idols. Tim Keller was talking about how he had met with a woman who was constantly finding her identity and worth in relationships. And she was worshiping relationships. And he talked about, he just met her and said, how are you finding freedom from that in your life? How are you constantly, like, you've identified that's your idol. How are you breaking free from that idol? And she said this, my answer is Colossians 3. Your life is now hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you will appear with him in glory. She said it's very practical. I look at men, I look at relationships, and I'm saying, I'm glad to know you, but you're not my life. Christ is my life. I'm done making anything else my life. You're a good thing, but you're not an ultimate thing. I would love to have a husband, but if I don't get one, I've got Jesus and his people. I've set my mind on things above, and you can't give me any of the things he can give and has given me. See, I don't look to these things to give me life. These things can't die for me. If I live for a career, if I live for a relationship and fail, it will just beat me up all my life for having been a failure. But Jesus died and he's forgiven me. He's in relationship with me. And so we see in this text, it's constantly this reminder. It's calling out the lie. It's calling out. It's remembering. It's saying, this thing can never satisfy. And rejoicing and remembering the gospel. That's what I love about what we do here on Sundays. That's what I love about what we do in missional communities and core. Like, we get an opportunity to be in relationship with one another, to remind each other of who we worship and why we worship and what is worthy of our worship. So we need people. We need people to help us point out our idols. We need people to help us understand what is it that we have in our right hand that we're trusting. What is that created thing that we're worshiping above the Creator? See, that idol that you love, it doesn't love you back. Only Jesus can. There's only one person who is worthy of our worship. There's only one person who can take the full weight of your expectations. He will never leave. He will never depart you. He will never turn his back on you. His promises are true, and he's faithful to his character. My question to you tonight is he your life? Don't buy into the foolishness of idolatry. Trust in Jesus. Is he your life? Tonight, there was a card in your seat. And on that card, one side, it has prayer requests. On the other side, there's prayers of belief. And my hope is tonight that some of you who are here who may have never trusted in Jesus, my hope and prayer tonight is that you would reach out, that you would trust him, you would ask him to save you. For those of us in this room who are Christians, who are following Jesus, there is a time, the way we became Christians is we repented of our idols. We repented of the things that we looked to find joy, meaning, satisfaction. We looked to these things to find significance in life. And we repented of those idols. We repented of the things that we made sacrifices for, or repented of the things that we loved more than Jesus. And when we heard the gospel proclaimed of what Jesus has done for us, immediately we recognized the lie. We recognized the counterfeit. We recognized that there's nothing that can be as beautiful, as glorious as Jesus. And we recognized it. In that moment, we had clarity. In that moment, we recognized our eyes were open. We saw the gospel for what it truly was. We recognized Jesus as the only thing worthy of our worship. We saw it. But we tend to go back, right? We tend to constantly go back between Daniel 2 and Daniel 3. And so tonight maybe just is an opportunity for us to come and remember the gospel, to have our eyes full of the good news of Jesus, and to remember what he's done for us. The gospel is the answer to the folly of idolatry. Let's pray. Father, we thank you for an opportunity to gather and be reminded of who Jesus is. And to be reminded as we sing, on Christ the solid rock I stand, all other ground is sinking sand. Lord, every other thing that we look to is a lie. Lord, when we learn that from King Nebuchadnezzar, in many ways we are just like him. In many ways we struggle and we fight for what we worship. But I pray that tonight we would be able to say, Christ is our life. Christ, would you become our life? In Jesus' name.